Good evening, everybody. Shmuel Plotzker coming at you live from Gulf Manor Synagogue in our School of Jewish Studies. It's Tuesday night, August 28, and we're going to continue our study of Melachim Aleph, chapter 7, 1 Kings chapter 7. Before we do, Mrs. Berloff tells me that there's an interesting article that she forwarded on about Isaac Newton and his study of the Amo and how it impacts the Beis HaMikdash.
No, he was trying to calculate the size.
He was trying to calculate the size of the temple based upon what an Amo looked like.
He was trying to relate the size of the earth.
He was trying to relate all that to the size of the earth. A fascinating intellect, this guy. And according to an article that I came across, I'm sure I still have it somewhere. I do! It's right here. It was in the New York Review of Books. The New York Jewish Review of Books. And the name of the book is Priest of Nature, The Religious Worlds of Isaac Newton by Rob Iliff, came out recently, reviewed by Matt Goldish, a professor at Ohio State. The article is called Maimonides, Stonehenge, and Newton's Obsessions. A genius of epic proportions was Newton, and very interested in religion. He wasn't just a scientist. He was a shtickle theologian in a way, interested in Judaism and Jewish mysticism. But listen to the last paragraph. Again, he was into Kabbalah. He was waiting for Latin translations. And between 1677 and 1685, an enormous compendium of genuine Kabbalistic writings in Latin translation, the Kabbalah Denudata, was published by Christian Knorr von Rosenroth. And suddenly, European scholars from John Locke to Lady Anne Conway were interested in Jewish mysticism. You might want to add, and Madonna, and other people too. Now here's his last paragraph. Whatever the level of Newton's interest in Judaica, he was never interested in actual Jews, who had been tacitly readmitted to England after almost 400 years of exile during his youth. A learned Jew named Isaac Abendana taught Hebrew at Cambridge, and he knew many of Newton's contemporaries, including John Locke, Henry Moore, and Robert Boyle. Although Newton read his books, he never strolled across the campus to meet him. How about that? Never strolled across the campus to meet the man who wrote the book. Never very interested in actual Jews, but fascinated by Judaism and scripture and Jewish mysticism. And so now we pick it up where we left. where we left off 2 weeks ago, the beginning of chapter 7, and I'm happy to say, with my eyes rolling heavenward, we are still confronted with numbers in this paragraph. But now we're going to be confronted by the numbers involved in Shlomo's own house. Perhaps we already were introduced to Shlomo's numbers in the temple, the Beis HaMikdash. And now we're going to hear about Shlomo's house that he built and the numbers that went into that, and the computation, how long, how wide, and how broad, and so on. So if you were delighted with chapter 6, you're going to be just as happy with chapter 7. So here we go.
Did we talk about how long it took him to build the Beis HaMikdash?
Well, I think that we may have in the very, very last paragraph, last pasuk. So let's take a look at the last pasuk. Okay? Pasuk Lamed Ches. That's chapter 6, verse 38. Uvashana ha'achas esrei, in the 11th year, beyerach bul, in the month of bul, hu achodesh hashmini, that's the 8th month of the Jewish calendar. He finished the house with all its parts and all the fashion thereof. Vayivnehu sheva shanim. He built it 7 years. So all I got on that is what we got. And let's take a look at the footnote again for those of us who are rusty, and that's me too. Been out of this a little bit. Looked at it this afternoon, but need more. He built it 7 years. Take a look at that footnote. After declaring that the construction began in the 4th year and was completed in the 11th year, there was no purpose in repeating that the total time of building was 7 years, other than to emphasize that there were no unnecessary delays. He built continuously for 7 years, quoting the Radak, quoting the Mitzvot David, and there is a footnote all the way at the end of the Sefer. Let's see if we can't find that. In just a moment, we'll see that footnote, and that is 638. Let's see what there is to see over there. Well, this is 637, and there is a footnote over here. It was actually 7 years and 7 months from beginning to end. The construction itself, however, took no more than 7 years. The remainder was caused by various work stoppages. So says the Mitzvot David, and compare with previous comments.
Right, which means Freddie just said there were no unnecessary delays in many things, but there were work stoppages.
Yeah, I guess there's necessary delays and unnecessary delays. Various work stoppages. Who knows exactly what that might have involved? Hard to know. Maybe the woodcutters did a back in the day, the unions, when they were always striking back in New York,
a work stoppage, blue flu.
Interesting. I remember that there was a phrase that they always seemed to use whenever a union decided to not show up in New York, way back in the day.
Wildcat
strike. Okay, there's that. No walk off. There was a stop action, a work action, something. A word action comes to mind. But no action is really what's going on with it. Right. So okay, so it's 7 years and with 7 months, and apparently there were some stoppages along the way, but 7 solid years of working. Now, Bob feels that it was unnecessary to mention the extra month, or the additional months constituted the time used for decorating and beautifying the temple, not the construction. The additional 7 months, according to the Rabag, were needed for decorating and beautifying the edifice, but it was already built, and that would explain the extra months. So without further ado, Rabbi Mrs. Brill, if we get into it, Pasuk Aleph in Perek Zion, chapter 7, verse 1, Ves Beso Bana Shlomo Shlosh Esrei Shana. Now his house,
his house,
Solomon built 13 years. Then we're going to see why that took so long. By Echalas Kol Beso. He finished his whole house. He finished the entire structure. So apparently, Shlomo built his own palace. It took him nearly twice as long as the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So take a look, please, at a footnote to incorporate Rashi. We see Rashi, of course, and it's on its own, but let's see the footnote. Shlomo built his house 13 years. Although the temple was much more elaborate than was his own home, it took him much longer to build his own home because, and here he's quoting Rashi, because in work of the Most High, he hurried. And in his own way, for his own means, his own ends, his own building, he was sluggish. And the text tells us of his praiseworthiness. He hustled up the building of Hashem's house and got it done, if you'll excuse the expression, in today's climate, Donald Trump style. He laid down the law, you better get this done in 3-7 years, as fast as possible. He got it done. They put in a skating rink. They put in all the chandeliers, and it got done. Everybody got a bonus. But for his own purposes, nearly twice as long. Others say that he finished his house 13 years after the beginning of his reign. See, he started being the king, and then 13 years into the kingship, that's when he began to build his own palace. It took, therefore, only 2 years to build, according to this theory. This seems to contradict chapter 9, verse 10. Which implies it took 20 years to build both. let's go over for a moment, if we can, to chapter 9, verse 10, and see what it says over there. Chapter 9, verse 10. I got it. Chapter 9, verse 10. We'll just go straight there. There's a lot before it. Let's just focus in on that one for the moment. Vahim miktzei eshrim shana, asher bana Shlomo es shnei habatim. It was at the end of 20 years during which Shlomo had built the two houses, as Beis Hashem, the house of the Almighty, as Beis HaMelech, the house of the king. So it does seem, according to chapter 9, at first blush, chapter 9, verse 10, that we're talking about 20 years elapsing. It took 20 years for Solomon to build both houses, and both houses are very clearly delineated. So what is going on over here? Okay. I mean, it took him, help me out over here. If it took him 7 years to build the temple, and it took him 13 years to build his own house, isn't that how we're going to parse it out? 7 and 13 equals the 20.
He didn't simultaneously build both.
Right, he didn't simultaneously build both. It was over the 20-year period, right? But according to some other theory that we're being introduced to, he began building his own palace 13 years after the beginning of his reign, and that it only took 2 years to build. That seems to contradict chapter 9, which implies it took 20 years to conclude the building of both.
Where did he...
Where would they come up with 2 years to build it? And who's coming up with the 2 years? Where is that cheshbon?
Started at 13 and want to end at 20 at 7. Where is he coming up with this?
I'm not sure exactly what the marker is. Let's see the Radak.
It's not very clear.
Shloshes Rishana, achar klos beis Hashem, hisasek bevinyan beiso. 13 years after he concluded building the temple, he got involved in the building of his own house. V'yesh mefarshim kilo nisasek bevinyan beiso elashtei shanim. But there are those who say that he did not get involved in the building of his own house except for a two-year period of building. Ufirush, Shlosh Esrei Shana, or Ufirash, maybe, Ufirshu, and they explain Shlosh Esrei Shana, Ufirush, in the explanation of Shlosh Esrei Shana, the explanation of these 13 years, what's that mean, that phrase? Ad tom shlosha esrei shana. I got some strange looking letters over there at the back. Over there. Lemalchusa. It's at the end of the 13 years into his kingship. Therefore, that's the 13-year period that you're being introduced to in this phrase, in this pasuk. 13 years? Oh, it's the 13th year of his reign. Wow.
Is that
when
he's supposed to be finished?
Because
there you get 2 years.
Well, there's Beso, Bana, Shlomo. Oh, I see. Take a look at this, just the stammers of the Pasuk. There's Beso, Bana, Shlomo. And Shlomo built his house. Shlosh Esrei Shana. And they're going to teach in the 13th year of his kingship. That's how you understand that phrase. Shlosh Esrei Shana.
And I think, trying to say that he finished in the 13th year, and therefore it was 2 years between the two.
I think that he started in the 13th year, according to this, right? He started in the 13th year, and it took him 2 years.
Not sure.
Where do you get the 2 years? If he finished it in the 13th year, then you get 2 years.
That's what I think. That's what I think. At home,
Shlosh Esrei Shana Lemalchusa.
I think so.
Okay. Well, the fearish then, according to this shot, Yaksha Masha'ama Lamata, then we're going to have a kasha upon what's going to be said later on in chapter 9, that he miketz Eshrim Shana, a Shabbat Shlomo, Shnei Abatim. How do you make sense out of that? that at the end, in the chapter 9, we just read it, at the end of 20 years, Shlomo built, during which time, Shlomo built his two houses. So how do you make sense of that? Nered appears, ki Esrim Shana Hotzi Ben Shnei HaBatim Sheva Beveis Hashem Ushlosha Asar Beveiso. It took him 20 years, or 20 years elapsed, or 20 years were concluded in the building of the two houses, 7 years to build the temple, 13 years to build his own house. The Yuchlu Letarets, Kipirish Achad Echad Ve'estrim Shana Lemalchuso, Sheva Shanim Acha Hashlomas Habatim. Nasana Aram Nechiram. And they'll be able to explain, you'll be able to explain that the phrase Achad Ve'estrim Shana, 21 years, Lemalchuso, for his regarding his kingship, Sheva Shanim Acha Shlomo Sabatim, that it happened, that it was, that that's referencing 7 years after the conclusion of the building of the houses, Shenasan Aram Lechiram. Oh, I'm sorry. After the 7 years of building the houses, the temple and his own personal palace, then Nasan Aram Lechiram. He then gave cities to Chiram. We're going to see that soon. We're going to see there's a reference that he awarded some cities to Chiram. The Afal Pi Shechiram Nasa Shlomo Ba'atzei Arazim, and even though Chiram gave assisted Shlomo and these Arazim and these cedar trees, with Ba'atzei Baroshim, another kind of tree, Uva Zahav, and with gold, Levinyan Habatim, for the purposes of building the houses, meaning again the temple and his own palace, Lo Nasan Hu Lechiram Elo Ha'arim. He only gave him these cities as a reward at the very tail end of the 20th year of his kingship.
Right.
Well, to say, I don't know, that he finished his house 13 years after the beginning of his reign, I don't know, I like 7 and 13. You've got for Yivnehu Sheva Shanim, 7 years it took him to build the Beis HaMikdash, and then his house, 13 years, a chalas called Beiso, he finished his own house, and then you've got the Pasuk, below chapter 9, which says 20 years, and that's it. 7 plus 13 equals 20, and we've got to move on. I agree with the Rebbe, but I don't understand why we've got to come up with anything other than that. But all of us, let me just finish the footnote. A possible explanation, quoting the Radak, is that Shlomo gave Chiram those cities as a gift after 20 years of his reign, which was 7 years after the completion of the two structures, which together took 9 years. According to this, the completion of the two took 9. 7 for the temple, 2 for his own house, that's 9, according to this other theory. And then 11 years on top of that equals the 20th year, and in the 20th year of his kingship, he gave Chiram cities. I don't know. I like what I like. I like Pashut as possible. I mean, and it seems to me that the Pesukim are really shouting in that direction. If the previous Pasuk says it took 7 years, then it took 7 years. And then now his house, 13 years, took 13 years. And in chapter 9, it says it's a Pharish. So, you know, 20 years. There's nothing more to discuss. That's how I see it. Maybe I'm crazy. But Rav Rolov, I'm with you on this one. Pasuk Beis. Vayiben es Beis Ya'ar HaLevanon. He built, now the translation is a little bit interesting. He built the house of the forest of Lebanon. Vayiben es Beis Ya'ar HaLevanon. He built the house of the forest of Lebanon. That's how you translate anyway. The house of the forest of Lebanon. Mea Amma, excuse me, 100. Mea Amma Arco. 100 Amos was the length. The Chamishim Amma Rochbo. 50 Amos, 50 cubits, its breadth. Ushloshim Amma Komaso. And 30 cubits, 30 Amos, its height. Al arba'a ture amude arazim. On four rows of cedar pillars. Uchrusos arazim al ha'amudim. And cut beams of cedar upon the pillars. Wow. Four rows of cedar pillars and cut beams of cedar upon those pillars. Cedar beams upon cedar. It's a lot. Now, what does it mean when the Pasuk says he built the house of the forest of Lebanon? Is he up in Lebanon, in contemporary Lebanon? Is he in Hiram's territory, all the way up in Tyre or something? Or is he back in Yerushalayim? Of course he's in Yerushalayim. So it's pshat as Beis Ya'ar HaLevanon, the house of the forest of Lebanon.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
One is it had so many wooden columns there that it looked being like a forest. It was like an exaggerated, an expression, like a nickname for it. So it's a forest house.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like forest with all the wood. Secondly, it is possible, and here I'm not clear if this was supposedly not his normal house, only a summer house, or built like a summer house, that you build it in the forest, and then you have a lot of windows, so, to maximize the cooling potential of it.
Right.
So I'm not sure if he means that that was his palace that was built here in the summer mode, or if this was an adjunct to his regular, in addition to his regular house.
But, yes.
The space value without all the extra add-ins with the base on it, his palace is bigger.
His own palace is bigger. 100 Amos. You know what? I brought in some water and some orange juice. But anybody, I completely forgot it in the car.
Anybody
like some?
If you feel the need for a refreshment break, you want to take the break and bring it in, fine.
Okay.
And I was here. But otherwise, to me, I don't see this
worth
the
I need a little bit of a break.
Sure.
Just give me a second. And Rabbi Mrs. Willis, if you want, please discuss that. If you can perhaps maybe clean it up for us.
The beginning of Malach, Paragraph 5, it says, the house that he built for Hashem was 60 cubits by 20 cubits, and the height was 30. And this is 100 cubits by 50 cubits, and a height of 30.
Again, the first step was what? The base of
Mikdash? Okay, let's go back. Okay, the base of Mikdash at the beginning of Vav, there were all those extra add-ons, but the basic house, they said, was 60 cubits long versus 100 for Solomon's palace.
Right.
And its breadth was, the Beis HaMikdash was 20 cubits versus 50 for Shlomo's house, and the height for both each of them was 30.
I'm wondering if the 30 ala height for their several stories, and it seems awfully, even at the most minimal reckoning, you have approximately a foot and a half, that's 45 inches,
25 feet.
Oh, what, again?
45 feet.
That's right. 45 feet. I mean, that sounds like a multi-story.
Well, it talked about, it seemed to imply that there were steps up and down and stuff in the Beit HaMikdash. So it's very possible that it was a...
You talked about what?
Steps in the Beit HaMikdash going upper and lower. But the point is, it appears at first blush, like I said, there were all those other add-ons and things that complicated the Beit HaMikdash, but it looks at first blush as if his palace is considerably larger than the Beit HaMikdash.
Right, remember, a lot of the Beit HaMikdash stuff was done in the Azor era, right?
That's what I said.
We don't tackle
these add-ons. But
right. Well, you have a diagram by Newton of the Beit HaMikdash. Where did I see something more involved? Didn't I see something somewhere, some sort of depiction with the numbers and everything of the base of the first base of Mikdash? I thought I saw something. Like an effort made to kind of make some sense on how it looked and how big it was and all that. I don't know.
I'd like to find out if there's any evidence anywhere about the particulars of the second base of Mikdash, not the Herodian structure towards the very end.
Pre-Herodian.
Right.
A great question. I think the National Geographic did something about that several years ago, but the Herodian. And that's the best we can do,
that's
I think.
That's the one that we talk about,
right.
The ancient one that we, that was the Herodian we
right. Let's take a look at that footnote, the House of the Forest of Lebanon. I'm going to be quoting the Radak. It was the custom of kings during that period to build for themselves a summer home in the forest, where it was cool, as Rabbi Roloff said. Two different pshatloch, and one of them is building a cool house to keep the king cool. Shlomo also built one in the forest of Lebanon. Okay, so apparently...
Shlomo is not his normal, regular house?
I guess not. I guess, I mean, you know, he must have had his own... I mean, it's hard to know. But according to this, we're being introduced to this idea, this fabulous palace in a forest in Lebanon, way north. And there was a Targum Yonasan say, a house for the cooling of kings. Uvana yas base mekeras malchaya. He built a house, mekeras malchaya, of the chilling, the cooling, making cold for kings. Wow. Okay, so this is a summer home to keep him cool. And let me tell you, if you've been to Israel, you know it can get a little bit hot there. And that's why they build everything with stone walls to keep things cool. And the Ralbag is going to tell us the forest of Lebanon was very probably near the Beit HaMikdash, which was therefore called Lebanon. As in Isaiah chapter 10, verse 34, and Zechariah chapter 11, verse 1. So you have an area near the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, itself called Livanon, and that's where it is. It's not all the way up near Turkey, in northern contemporary Lebanon. No, rather it's right there in Jerusalem, and you have scriptural support for that. Others say this summer home was called Lebanon because of the many wooden pillars, which gave it an appearance of a forest, as Rabbi Roloff read earlier from the Metzudas David. The architectural details of this building cannot be described with accuracy, he writes, since the meaning of many of the terms are uncertain. The cedar pillars are those that stood along the length of the 100 cubits. Each row was arranged along the length of the 100 cubits. Therefore, from the first row into the fourth row was 50 cubits, which was the width of the house. See the annotation of the author of the temple structure. And see further Rashi and Rabbeinu Yeshaya HaRishon. And the Ralbag and the Metzudah maintain that these pillars of cedar were arranged along the width, thereby dividing the 100 cubit length into three equal parts. Hard to understand. and cut beams of cedar. What's that all about? Uchrusos arazim al ha'amudim. Cut beams of cedar, okay, upon the pillars. This is going to be a very long one. And cut beams of cedar. Says Rashi, the beams of cedar were arranged along the length of the house. There was a row of pillars on the ground, and the cut beams were placed from pillar to pillar. A row of pillars on the ground, and the beams were placed from pillar to pillar. And it's further Rashi, and the second row of pillars was in front of the first row of pillars and facing the width of the house. And so it was with all four rows. And the covering of the boards on the beams was to serve as the floor of the upper story of the house.
Two-story.
Covering of the boards on the beams was to serve as the floor of the upper story of the house, which was from one row to the next row on the cut beams. And these pillars were made with many entrances like a porch, and the cut beams were as a lintel which is on the doorposts.
I don't forget, the lintel is the horizontal or the vertical?
I think that is the horizontal. And these cut beams were also in order to stand the walls on them, which are the tzla'os mentioned in the text. And the reason that he said the walls on the pillars and didn't say on the cut beams, because the pillars are the main, since the house rests upon them. And the cut beams were only to strengthen and join one pillar to the other, so that the dwelling should be one. And these beams were flat on their sides. They were not vertical. And what he says, quote, on the pillars, he means to say on the cut beams, which are on the pillars, but it was not called by its own name, because of the pillars. It's also possible that the cut beams did not rise above the pillars, since they were not lying on the top, but were placed at the top of the pillars and level with the top, in parens, but not as a lintel which overlooks the doorposts, but rather as a long peg which joins two pillars. That is, the pillars extended through the beams. And that which he said, from the cut beams on the pillars, does not mean above the pillars, but on the top part of the pillars. Now we find that that which is on the cut beams is indeed on the pillars. Up until here is the commentary of the author of the temple structure. Please, no questions. Thanks very much. Just kidding. Atkan Rashi, Atkan Pirush Baal Surah Sabayas.
Oh, there's a source that Rashi worked with.
That was a source that Rashi was quoting and working with. Amazing. In the 10th, 11th century, he had that work.
Why does the beams go all the way up the house?
I knew you were going to go there. I knew this.
But they're cut. Maybe they're cut to put supports in to make second story.
Maybe.
On the top, but, you know, the top of the cut kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
When they put in the plank to make the second story, and then it continues to the top to support the roof.
Yeah. I'm
wondering if this is an addition.
Sure makes some sense out of this. And I can't. Yeah, go ahead.
What? This is really Rashi? Or somebody later that put it in Rashi, because it's in private parentheses in mine. Look at the very first thing in Pesach Beis, Rashi. Beis Yahav Bono, Kirgir Ganes, Mitzvah, Kiris Mokia. I have in mine, at least, in parentheses, right, Talmudia Razam Amdim Gorecham Hamea Amma, Kol Tovetul Erechamea, which are reaching to Riech Mama, right? Haggah. This is, you know, a inserted note, I think it means here.
Mm-hmm.
A gloss. Mm-hmm. I do not think that this is Rashi's quoting to Tobias, I think some later editor, printer inserted it to Rashi. I don't know who it is.
Wow. In other words, taking an entire chunk of a book, say for Tzuras HaBayis, and attributing it?
I don't know if we attribute it. I mean, if it's in parentheses, then it's not even an attribution, unless the parentheses was a later chachma of a later editor who realized that it says, Haga, we bow Tzuras HaBayis. I don't know who wrote Tzuras HaBayis. Maybe it's known. Google it. Maybe it's known Lake Rishon or Acheron even, that somehow in earlier times it was not considered such a major transgression, I think, to interpolate later sources into earlier ones. And hopefully, you would indicate that, and use the word hopefully very rightly,
Right. I've never heard of that. Then again, it's a lot I've never heard of, but that's interesting and a tremendous, tremendously long excerpt from that sefer. It's amazing. Okay. I feel kind of funny continuing on with this stuff, because I'm just not really holding, but let's keep going. It was covered with cedar. That's actually the next pasuk. That's Gimel, and my sefer does not really even reflect that. So let me put that in there. There you go. So on pasuk, we'll now be on pasuk Gimel. V'safun ba'erez mima'al al hatzala'os asher al ha'amudim. Arba'im v'chamisha, and it was covered with cedar above on the walls, which were on 45 pillars. Chamisha asar hator, 15 in a row. And all this was covered with cedar above on the walls, which were on 45 pillars, 15 in each row. So three rows. Okay, take a look. It was covered with cedar. The safun ba'erez was covered with cedar. There was a ceiling over it from above, says Rashi. On the walls, al hatzala'os on the walls, says Rashi in another long one, the upper partitions which were on the cut beams. There were four partitions next to each other, in the width and extended along the length of the house. You know what would be great? If we somehow got a hold of some sort of artist and just asked them to render to us. I mean, just give me something you got, whatever you got. Make some sense out of this. Show me beams on beams. Give me some numbers. Draw it to some kind of scale. Make it look like something I can make some sense out of. Wouldn't that be a good idea?
Hasn't it been done many times? You're a guy, you have a... What do you call all these temple...
Masonic guys? The Masonic Lodge guys?
No, what do you call them? What do you have in the Jerusalem that hell they have a model of it? They don't know which way something goes.
That's the thing. Is it the first or second temple? I would think it's the second one.
You have to check that out.
Right, but I have a feeling that they're going on the Herodian one.
Right, so
it's a little bit more able to be, accessible. They have Mishnayos Midos, they can work with it. But over here, I mean, how many people to sit down besides Newton? How many people, decide to give me an illustration? I'd like to, it would be great to find somebody who can spend a few minutes doing this, who could put in a few minutes. All right, yeah.
It's your advice is written from the short, your words, and it tells us young does. Yosef Heller, Dr. Lutheran Heller.
Wow. 1600, 1700?
I think it was 16. The first time it was printed was in Shin Samach Beis. Wouldn't that be 1702? Wait a minute. 1602, was it? Shin Samach Beis. Let's see. Tuft is 1640. So this would be 1602 it was printed. while the life of the first baby, he lived early. He probably lived born in 1500s into the system. And then it gives the history of the later printings, editions. But it's very, and it's available, you know, as such. So somebody at some stage, which is unknown to me, obviously, at this point, decided to insert certain helpful explanations into the Rashi text.
I mean, how does one do that? How does one take that kind of liberty?
Well, again, if it's put in parentheses,
then it's okay.
Then it's so bad, right? It's just another variant of a footnote or an endnote or a, you know,
right here.
Different ways of doing it.
Why put into Rashi's Pirush? Write your own Pirush.
Why?
Because
there are lessons profound than that. In those days, very few people could afford a Mikras Gedolos or any expansive Sefarim or a new specialty Sefer. But hopefully they had a basic Tanakh with the basics like Rashi.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be a little, you know, boost beyond the standard Rashi.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is...
So it's your Yosef Lippmann Heller.
Yeah, it's like, for example, if you imagine if elementary school students who are only presented in class or have to bring to class a Chumash and Rashi, there might be some addition ED, which would have an addition ADD little feature here and there, and there are many things like that, you know, to enhance the contents of just... A chumash with only Rashi, you have a little here, little thing there, but because you wouldn't expect these people to have a part in that.
Right here. I find the whole thing fascinating.
Don't.
Putting you right into Rashi's Pirush, it's amazing.
Yeah. But when you get some exposure
like that.
Yeah, right. The problem is when then later on it becomes almost difficult to not have to separate.
It's kind of difficult for Rashi people something written. You know.
Right.
We had that Russian language.
That's fascinating also, the Russian language thing.
Yeah,
had to be.
Because
Rashi was almost never, I mean, to the best of my knowledge, we're never quoting Russian. quoting French, obviously, quote German a little bit, but, Russian was, why Russian? In the 1000s, in the 11th century, very unusual. Like he knew Russian.
I don't believe that Russian was known as a language. There was a Slavic language. He called Slavic words, probably Russian Kanani. You know, some old Slavic, common Slavic language.
Oh, it's called Russian Kanani.
Yes, Kanani became just as Ashkenaz was used to being German, and a little bit of a muscle. I suggest that Spard and Sarfas similarly were used for being French and not originally mean that. Were referred to the Tanakh, but I don't believe as many others do believe that the Tanakh was that's what they were referred to. Edom is Rome, you know, there was a whole habit of doing that kind of thing. The Canaan somehow became Slav. I don't think it's a coincidence that the most heavily the word Slav is related to the word slave. But he Canaan Eved Lomo, you know, there may be a very direct connection there. But if you look at the history of the Slavic tribes, it's not clear who was a Russian. There may have been the ones in Ukraine, they have been the main Russians, and then they gradually diversified. Belarusians, Ukraine, Ukrainians, regular Russians. The whole thing's not clear. It may be even that the name of the Rus part of Russia, Rus might have been the name of a Nordic and a Germanic tribe that the Slavs called in the mercenaries or something to fight, to help support their army when they were being attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And the history is murky, let's just say. Kiev, I believe, was the earliest capital of anything called Russia. And Kiev today is what is Ukraine. No, it's not that.
Mm-hmm.
Called Russia.
Yeah.
So they own slightly different Slavic languages. So it's not a smooth thing at all. What's Russia? What was Russia? But I believe that particular thing in Rashi was an interpolation. And how many times the Saperstein have parts of Rashi and braces or whatever, and then there's notices in the earliest printed Rashi, printed Rashi, let's say, this passage is etched, is not there, and, you know, there, it wasn't, I think it's a fairly common technique to add helpful with, you know, things.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that, Rabbi Roloff. It was good. It was covered with cedar. There was a ceiling over it from above, says Rashi. And again, we're still in Pasuk Gimel, and I think that I'm going to at least going to reread this footnote if I haven't done it already. I'll do it now. Again, it was covered with cedar. There was a ceiling over it from above, says Rashi. On the walls, al hatzalaos, the upper partitions which were on the cut beams. There were four partitions next to each other in the width and extended along the length of the house. Each had openings and windows, for this was a summer home made for air. And on those partitions was the covering of the ceiling. The ceiling was of 45 boards, three rows of boards for the three spaces, formed by the four rows of pillars. 15 boards to each row of the house. That is, in each space, 15 of them were placed. Their length was along the width of each row, and their width was along the length of the house, one next to the other, says Rashi. The Mitzvah agrees with Rashi in rendering tzla'os as walls. Rabag and Radak, however, maintain tzla'os are the cut beams. And we continue into Pasuk Dalet. Ushkufim shlosha turim. And there were windows shlosha turim in three rows. Umechaze el mechaze, and each window opposite another window, shalosh pa'amim. Three times. So what does it all mean? What's that?
Lots of
crossbeams, indeed. Let's take a look at a footnote. There were windows in three rows. Uskufim shloshatur. Radak and Matsuros rendered shkufim windows, like the Pasuk says in Genesis, in Bereishis chapter 26. Abimelech looked out at a window.
Yeah, I wonder what Yashke did use. It's used, I think, as a verb there.
Right, I thought so.
The chalon is an actual window. Yashke Abimelech at a chalon.
Right, and don't we also have Hashkifa Mimon Kachacham in Hashemayim? Pasuk in Devarim.
Yeah,
where Moshe is asking Hashem to glance down, to look down upon the Klai Yisrael. So the Hashkif means to look down, to glance down, take a look, give a kick, that kind of thing.
Wait,
so,
Abimelech is at 26, much earlier, you know?
Maybe it is, but all I have is yet another mistaken citation.
Well, one second, or is there another puzzle?
Abimelech looked out at a window.
And that's, what's the, so what is the citation, 20, chapter 26?
According to this, chapter 26.
What verse?
That they don't give.
Oh, chapter 26. That I think that is too late. Let's look at chapter 26.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
They're trying to figure out yet another potential mistake by the editors. Got to be careful. When you look up citations, when you give citations, you got to look them up yourself. Then you release the book.
Actually, I'm wrong. It is the right one. I'm wrong. I was thinking of Yera, not with Abraham. However, the citation is correct.
26, what's the topic? But in any event, it's going to be a verb over there, I bet.
Yeah.
Not going to be a noun, right? And yet they want to paint this as a noun. Shkufim windows, as we see in Brachos, shkufim or shkufa. I don't know about that. Excuse me. Mrs. Brilla wants to know if this was a summer house, how big was the regular house? Well, you know, it's just good to be the king.
Yeah, plus it says.
Thank you. 26.8.
Is simply the verb for looking. Chalon is the window.
Right. Right. Okay, Rashi, thank you very much. Well, if Rashi, however, prefers to translate shkufim as lintels from the word mishkof.
Mashkof, I think.
Okay, but they point it here as mishkof.
Really?
Well, that's how they
point it. Okay, that's how, because we have, that we have, I think, in the Torah, we have it in the Yetzias Mitzrayim. And it is mishkof, interesting. When they left, when they were told to put the church mishkof.
Mm-hmm. Very good. We got some El HaMashkof. Shkoyach. The word is Mashkof in the Torah, and therefore this ought to be corrected to that.
Yes.
All right. Good. Thank you. And the word is Mashkof. As follows, quote, he also made another covering near the three rows of boards and the three rows of lintels, because the width of 15 boards did not cover the house in all its length, which was 100 cubits. And he therefore made near it to cover the house, a covering of small boards placed on small beams, which were left from one row of long cut beams to the other. Or should we read placed? Which were placed from one row of long cut beams to the other. There were then, and this is again continuing Rashi, three small beams, one next to the other. That should read at the end of the other. Three small beams, one at the end of the other. And lintels on both their sides, similar to a lintel against which the door strikes, and of those lintels the ends of the small boards were placed. The length of the small boards facing the width of the larger boards, which he put there at first. You know, you have to see it to believe it. I mean, that's really what I'm getting. You got to be some kind of talented architect to kind of render this into something. And I'm looking, maybe Maltinsky can do this for us. I'm going to go get Michael Maltinsky and have him just give me some kind of rudimentary workup. Work this up, Michael. Do the best you can with this. And each window was opposite the other one. But once he would do it, even if he did it in like the most rudimentary way, it'll look like something. And they'll be able to appreciate it or something, I think. And each window, u'mechazeh el mechazeh shalosh pamim. And each window was opposite the other window three times. And what does that mean? Each window was opposite the other window. Radak and the Mitzudas translate mechazeh as windows, whereas Rabak prefers entrances. Rashi, however, continues in his unique manner, and he renders thusly, quote, the ends of the boards of this lintel were opposite the ends of the boards of this lintel. Thanks, Rashi.
Well, I think Rashi is basing himself on the Targum. Now, I just can't dawn on me, because the Targum is the word that initially was totally unfamiliar to me, as being Dalit Uchleisna, right? And then he follows it up in Hay. But now I think we often use Kuznaos with what, a Arabim or something, or for Sukkah, I forget, like beans.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't remember that it was spelled as a cup, but it might be spelled cup, but apparently it's spelled as a cup. So that's the most, and Rashi won't directly tag the other stuff. So he's on, you know, acting on good authority. I believe it was smart.
Got it. Okay, that's good.
Well, it helps when you know what it is.
Sorry? Absolutely. Our last one for the night, and it's going to be window. The word mechazeh. The word mechazeh is an expression of an edge. And Menachem, famous grammarian, also explained it thusly and related it to Pasuk in Tehillim. Tehillim 7, verse 30.
Is this a Rashi or what?
Sounds like
I don't, can't find it in Rashi, but normally you know that two girls help go to Menachem. I can't find it.
Yeah, mechazeh, just a plain old word, mechazeh.
Oh, mechazeh, mechazeh.
Lashon katzeh. The word mechazeh is an expression of, quote, an edge.
Yeah,
now, according to Rashi, and Menachem also explained it that way, and he related it to the words, unto their desired haven, mechoz cheftzam, mechoz, in the smichut, mechoz cheftzam, their desired haven. In Psalm 7, verse 30, okay, he related it to the word goal or end, and every term chazis, every time you see the word chazis, which is in the language of the Mishnah, is translated thus, as, quote, in the order of the priestly function of the daily sacrifice, quoting Mishnah in Tamid, Tamid chapter 2, Mishnah 4, in the order of the priestly function of the daily sacrifice. And also, another usage, he should make a ledge, a chazis from the outside in Baba Basra in Daf Beis Amud Aleph Hashutfim. And as proof this is not a window, as Mitsudos prefers, we see that the Targum, he too renders this as a projection opposite a projection. But shkufim atumim, and you're going to see, we already saw that in chapter 6, verse 4. Let's go back for a moment. Chapter 6, verse 4. Where's that? Okay. Bayas labayas. Chalone shkufim atumim. Right, we discussed that a bit back in the day. Windows broad within and narrow without. Broad inside, narrow outside. Chalone shkufim atumim. Okay? Shkufim atumim above in 6.4, and likewise revuim sheketh, he translated them all as beams. Okay. Okay, let's just do one more. Pasuk v'chol ha'pesachim v'mezuzos revuim shakef. And all the entrances and posts were square, according to this. Umul mechzeh el mechzeh shalosh pa'amim. Also the window. Each window was opposite the other window three times. So what's that mean? All the entrances and posts, ha'pesachim v'mezuzos revuim shakef, they were squared off. Says Rashi, there were many of these, because generally a king's summer home is made with many entrances because of the air which could enter thereby, and it was therefore called a forest house, because it was like a forest with many wooden posts. It really resembled the wood, the woodsy look resembled a forest. And these entrances and posts were square. Jonasson translated this square and covered the beams, meaning the entrances were covered with thin boards, and they were square as other entrances of houses, and they were not made a rounded arch similar to the entrance of a great hall. Rather, they were squared away. And finally, each window was opposite, umul mechze el mechze shalosh panim, and each window was opposite the other window three times. And the front of the edge, says Rashi, was put facing the other edge. The top of the board was towards the top of the other board, three times in each board. And I do not know how this was. Rashi, not as Mitsudos. What? I was hoping just to kind of end off in a, you know, kind of like, you know, okay, so let's bring it home. And then suddenly Rashi says, I don't really know what's going on.
I have no idea.
I have no idea. So I feel much, much better. Beini odeh heich, says Rashi, I don't know how that worked out. The top of the board was towards the top of the other board three times in each board. You just had to be there. You just had to be there. So I want to thank everybody for showing up for yet another class in ancient architecture, temple architecture. Thank you so much, everybody, for coming out. Hope you enjoyed this class. My question is, next week, we are rapidly approaching Rosh Hashanah.
If you really be bringing me home, I don't know how we're going
to work out. Can we have a class Tuesday night if Rosh Hashanah is going to be the next Sunday evening?
I'm saying beyond that, you may be bringing me next night, but we don't know the time. Exactly.
Yeah, I have to pick him up from the airport.
On Tuesday night?
Tuesday evening.
Got it. Oh, we shall talk. I mean, everything should go well. Multiple Mazel Tov, Simchas, the Brola family. So if you guys are going to be at the airport, then maybe we will.
We have a month. We have to be out for a month.
Right.
I think you did the answer for
everyone.
I think we don't know. Right. That's all we can say.
Right. Okay. You want to call up by air. Call up by air. We'll try to meet. And if you're able to show up from the airport, that's great. If not, We'll do what we can.
Are you going to do it by phone in any case?
I think maybe I should do it by phone and give the people throughout, wherever
that's
they
your
are.
Your choice.
And then we could always review a little bit when we get back together again in a month. We'll kind of...
probably want to do anyway.
Right. You could want to do anyway after all that, right.
Yeah. In other words, you're having class, just not
right.
Knowing you're doing ASC.
Right. Let's try that. You should go, Gazin, and Kim Gazin, and enjoy the Simchas. The chasen, I'm told, and the kiddush, and the best of health.
Allergy Monday will be there.
Right.
You know, another class. Right.
Everything should go well. Enjoy the Simchas.
Oh, me.
Simchas and Mazel Tov. Hatzlacha and bracha, enjoy. And our regards to all the mishpachas. Should only have Simcha and the best of health. Thanks for coming out.
Thank you.